You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Hi, and welcome to Pet Life Radio. This is the Exotic Pet Vet Show. I'm Dr. Lori Hess, and I'm here with my colleagues, Dr. Kristen Britton and Dr. Amanda Marino. And today, we were going to talk about something really important to us, choosing an exotic pet that's right for you. So here, we work together at the Veterinary Center for Birds and Exotics in New York, and every day, we see all kinds of species. Rabbits, rodents, guinea pigs, chinchillas, rats, mice, hamsters, gerbils, reptiles, even some crazy things like sugar gliders, hedgehogs, potbelly pigs, all kinds of animals. And it's often interesting for us to see who comes in with these pets. And it's fun for us to see, you know, exactly how people are interacting with their pets and maybe why they chose them. Sometimes the match is really great, and other times we don't always feel that way, do we?
Not necessarily.
So we thought it would be really fun to share with you a little bit about why we chose some of the pets we chose on our own growing up and what pets we've had. So, Dr. Britton, do you want to let people know about that?
Yeah, so when I was a kid, I had a plethora of pets growing up. You know, dogs were our mainstay. But then we started getting into the more exotic animals. My sister and I, growing up as young children, had two rats. And they were awesome pets. We would walk around with them, have them on our shoulders. They would play, you know, share our food with them, and just really a wonderful bond and a wonderful way to have an animal in your life that isn't necessarily like the dog or the cat. You know, we also definitely had rabbits as well. I think for the age that we were at, maybe it wasn't the right pet for us. And definitely we probably could have done a better job with those pets. And so that's why I think that this is important. Some pets are right for certain ages of people, types of people, just your lifestyle in general. But yeah, I mean, rats and things like that, that's where my heart is at. I love those little guys.
I always wanted a rat. I was just frustrated because I had so many cats growing up that a rat in my house wouldn't have lasted 5 minutes. And I grew up in New York City, so people in New York City are a little strange about pet rats.
Yep.
They don't get how amazing pets they are and that they bond as well as, you know, to their owners as well as dogs or cats. But people get a little weirded out because of the subway and stuff. What about you, Dr. Marino?
So growing up, I probably started out with some more exotic pets other than the dogs and the cats, which came a little bit later on in life for me. So probably the first pet that I had were fish, which were fun, but, you know, not necessarily the most interactive pet that we've ever had. So not soon after that, my parents got us some parakeets. And I think they were way in over their head because we were still young enough that we couldn't really do much with them and do much to clean the cage and feed them and take care of them. I remember explicitly one story of me letting the birds out of the cage and trying to catch them in the house, which had ceiling fans and things that were not great for the house that we lived in. And so thinking back now, I wish my parents would have done some research before they went out and decided to pick a pet to figure out what they needed to do to house them appropriately and what it took to really take care of them. Because, you know, I don't know that they would have chosen those as the right pet for us at the age that we had them.
Well, I can top all of you. So I have this book coming out called Unlikely Companions, and I've been doing a lot of talking about why I became a veterinarian. It's a memoir about being an exotic animal vet. But as a result of writing this, I've had a lot of people ask me recently, so what kind of pets did you grow up with? And interestingly, I grew up in New York City in an eighth-story high-rise on the Upper East Side. And my parents and my brother are as crazy about animals as I am. In fact, my father, who is a pretty high-powered attorney in New York City, really should have been a farmer because when he goes off to Massachusetts, my parents have a house there, he has an entire flock of ducks that follow him around because he feeds them inappropriate things like bread that I yell at him about. But I grew up in this apartment where we not only had the typical cats and dogs and guinea pigs and birds and all the things, you know, that many people have, but we had two 150-gallon fish tanks. One was salt water and one was fresh water. And this was my dad's major hobby. It helped him de-stress. But we didn't just have regular fish. We had stingrays and we had eels. We even came home. I came home one day to see a baby shark in the tank. And this was really rather odd growing up in the middle of New York City, but it definitely explains why I am so interested in animals and why I became a veterinarian. So I definitely think having pets as kids, but as Dr. Marino emphasized, the right pets in the right circumstances can change our entire opinion and of animals in general and our interactions and the way that we bond, and also whether the animals live happy and healthy lives. So our goal every day is to really talk to people about the best match that they can make for, you know, their situation, what kind of animals. So we wanted to talk about different animals, but I think we could cover, you know, just talking a little bit about what kind of questions should you consider if you're thinking about a pet. How do you know what pet is right for you? I mean, we talk about this all the time. What do you guys think?
Well, I think one of the first things that I want to know is what age of a person are we talking about? Are we talking about a young child that wants their first pet? And is that pet going to be sturdy enough for that young child? Are we talking about a teenager who maybe is having some difficulties at home, you know, interacting with the family and really needs their own little pet to take care of? Or are we talking about an adult that is looking to get their first on your own pet, or, you know, or their start, a young family kind of getting their start with their first pet? So I think kind of the age of the person is very important in what type of pet you may be looking for. I think time is also a big factor.
Definitely.
You know, how much time do you have for this animal? Is this an animal that has an enclosure that needs to be cleaned regularly? Or is this an animal that lives free in your house? You know, and then what types of things do you have in your house that may be potential dangers? But I think that time is a big factor in choosing an animal, because some of these pets, you know, when you're talking about a fish, that's not really a whole lot of time besides cleaning tanks and making sure that they're fed. You know, there isn't a whole lot of time that they need interaction-wise. Whereas if you're talking about something more interactive like a ferret, that's an animal that needs quite a bit of time and your attention as well.
Dr. Marino, what do you think about that?
One thing I want to think about, not to think about the money, but is the finances of it. Some pets are relatively inexpensive to get from the pet store.
Or from even a shelter.
But then you have to think about, where is that pet going to live? The enclosure, what kind of care does it need? The veterinary care. One of the things that we commonly see is that people go to the pet store and they get, you know, a guinea pig or an animal for a relatively inexpensive amount of money. And then they come to us, and especially if they're sick, in order for us to help treat the animal, there is finances involved with doing that. And so to think ahead and make sure that you guys have a plan financially for this animal as well.
The flip side of that, I'm always amazed, people will spend thousands of dollars on really rare animals like macaws, some incredible birds, but they forget that they actually need to set aside finances for veterinary care. So they're willing to lay out thousands of dollars to purchase the bird and the cage and the toys and even buy the produce or whatever else the animal needs on a daily basis, but then the animal gets sick and they're really surprised. A lot of people don't have pet insurance. So finances, you know, as much as we don't like to emphasize that, that's a reality for everybody these days.
Absolutely. And certain pets are more prone to certain diseases than others. And so definitely researching your animal before you are actually going to go purchase that animal. Find out the types of things. Talk to a veterinarian about this. Talk to people that breed these animals. Look up in some books. There are some great resources online. But just knowing what you're getting yourself into is very much, very important.
That's really key. I know there are a whole bunch of other things we want to get to here. Making a decision about a pet is very important. It can be a lifelong decision for some people, a lifelong commitment. So we want to emphasize all those factors that we consider and that we talk about. We're going to take a break for a second to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be back to talk further about how to choose the right pet, or exotic pet in particular, for you. This is the Exotic Pet Vet, and we'll be right back.
It's designerpetsweaters.com. Hand-knitted designer sweaters for your precious pup or cool cat. Beautiful couture patterns for your pets, including custom-knitted formal wear, casual wear, yachting, and even sports-themed. Many designer pet sweaters include feathered tammy hats, top hats, and a lot of sparkle. Each sweater includes leg loops, front paw sleeves, and leash opening. Visit designerpetsweaters.com to order your four-legged fashions today. Your pets will stay warm for the winter and be runway ready. Large or small, we fit them all. designerpetsweaters.com.
Yeah. Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Pet Life Radio, the Exotic Pet Vet. I'm Dr. Lori Hess, here with Dr. Amanda Marino and Dr. Kristen Britton. And today we're talking about choosing the right pet, particularly exotic pet, for you. So we talked a little bit about finances. We talked about how much time you have available, your lifestyle, your age, you know, how much attention you're going to be able to give this animal. I think other things have to do really just with space and what kind of living arrangement you have. Again, I mentioned earlier, I grew up in an apartment in New York City and we had 7 neighbors on our floor. I had a squawky parrot and let me tell you, there were neighbors that were not happy with this. So if you're going to have a loud pet, you really need to think about the fact, are you going to be able to tolerate that? Are your neighbors going to be able to tolerate it? Some of these pets that we see, like hedgehogs, chinchillas, they run all night long in a wheel. And if you're a light sleeper, that may not be the best pet for you. What are some other things we talk about when we tell people this?
So I think also kind of dealing with space, you may be going to the pet store or going to your local shelter and finding a pet that's young and looks great. So the biggest one that I usually have problems with are turtles and tortoises. They're absolutely adorable. They fit in your hand when they're little babies. But what a lot of people don't understand, and especially when it comes to space, some of these animals grow big enough, like a sulcata tortoise, for instance, that they need their own room in your house, not just a cage, but a true room or an outside area to be able to really roam around and do the things that they normally do. So again, researching is important, but you know, making sure that you are going to be able to provide the right environment for your pet.
And some people think just like a cat or a dog, you can have some of these exotic species like ferrets and even rabbits free roam in your house. But that isn't necessarily always the best idea because they're very prone to getting into things. And, you know, there are things that can injure them in the house as well, especially if you have other pets. So making sure that an animal has a safe place, like a cage that is an appropriate size for them, is very important as well.
I think some people, even pets that seemingly will walk on a leash, like potbelly pigs are a great example. You see them walking. I mean, there's that great commercial on television where this very proud couple is walking their potbelly pig down the street, and it looks very simple. But with potbelly pigs, yes, you can walk them on a leash. Yes, you can keep them in your home. But those animals are farm animals. They dig, and they'll dig a hole in your floor or in your wall if you don't have a place for them to do that. So unless you have an area in your backyard, if you live in a place where you can let them outside dig in the ground, you need to provide them with a wading pool, literally is what we recommend. It's called a rooting box that has papers and blankets and sometimes large stones, and they need to be able to dig, and that makes noise and it makes mess. So most people that live in small apartments or even small homes don't necessarily have that. And that's not something that people commonly expect when they get that nice little potbelly pig that they see walking neatly on a leash down Park Avenue on television. So again, I think Dr. Britton had a really good point. You really need to research these pets. I think another big factor is time commitment, not just on a daily basis, but long-term time commitment. Right, guys?
Absolutely. Some of these pets are very short-lived. Some of the shortest-lived exotic pets that we commonly deal with are rats. You know, hamsters, little rodents are usually fairly short-lived. Animals that can live a much longer period of time, birds, reptiles, for sure. I have some reptiles that come to see me, and they are 30, 50-plus years old. So this is potentially a very lifelong, you know, commitment for these guys. So choosing the right, again, kind of age and think about lifespan of that animal that you're choosing.
I think that lifespan is really important. I know you had a situation recently, Dr. Marino, where someone actually had to discuss willing them in their will. Yeah, because they were older, right?
Yep. So especially some people that have reptiles or even birds, they can well outlive some of the owners, especially if they get them later on in life. And so, you know, making sure that you have a plan, you know, as you get older and your animal's getting older is also important. And so, you know, as a veterinarian, sometimes we provide care for these animals. And we've even had owners that have asked us to take care of them or find them a home, you know, when the owners know that they're sick for some reason.
I think a lot of people, and I'm experiencing this now, buy pets for their children when their children are young. And we all, as parents, you know, I think a lot of people get caught in this. Oh, I want this. I want that. It's great. And I know I have parrots at home that I bought for my children when they were very young, and I have a child going off to college, and I do not know what I am going to do with this parrot that's going to live another at least 40 years when my son is gone. Who's going to take care of that animal? I mean, this animal lives in my son's room, and it's already difficult having a teenager with a million sports and everything else in his life, but people really need to think ahead of time. You know, your child's not going to be with you forever. Are you willing to take that responsibility on when your family dynamic changes?
Absolutely. And Dr. Hess, that I have cases like that all the time. You know, the parents are left with the rabbit, the turtle, the guinea pig, you name it. And they, you know, parents, keep this in mind. You know, your kids aren't always going to be home with you. And is your child going to want to take that animal potentially to college with them? Or if not, you know, where is that pet going to go?
And so one thing I think about traveling, I went to vet school very far away from home, as well as my internships prior to coming here. And so I had the chinchilla and then a dog and then a rabbit. And thankfully, those animals have all traveled very well, both in the car and on the plane. But something I didn't really think about when I got them as pets was what I was going to do with them when I was moving. Because in the last several years, I've moved around a lot. Not all animals are going to travel well in the car. Not all animals are going to travel well on the plane. Some of our animals are not even allowed on the plane either. And that's something to consider as well.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we appreciate here at the Veterinary Center, we board a lot of exotic pets, and we're one of the few places in the area that takes on these animals. Most veterinary hospitals and boarding kennels will not house these pets. So if you have the kind of lifestyle, if you have a career that takes you out of town a lot, or you like to take lots of vacations, for example, it can be really, really hard to have one of these animals, because unless you have full-time help at your home, bringing that animal somewhere else, it can be really difficult to find a spot to do that.
Absolutely. And some of these animals that we're talking about, and the ones that come into mind for me, are ferrets, you know, things that basically are persistent toddlers forever and ever and ever. And so they just need a lot of attention, a lot of time. So boarding is definitely something that you should think about when you have those types of animals as well.
I think another factor you really need to consider is, what other kinds of pets do you have in your house? I know I'm constantly asked, you know, I have dogs, I have cats. Those are the most common animals that we see in people's homes. Can I have a ferret, a bird, a reptile? I mean, Dr. Marino, you've had multiple different kinds of pets in your house. How have you dealt with that?
So I have a dog, and then I have two small animals. I have a chinchilla and a rabbit. And right now, they are all living in one room together, but I have put up a baby gate to keep them separate, because I, you know, as much as I know my dog loves the chinchilla and the rabbit, they'll sit there and, you know, lick each other through the cage. I just don't necessarily trust my dog, who is a predator, with my prey species animals. So that's something always to consider. Even if it seems like they're getting along well, all it takes is one thing to change. And, you know, a dog can inflict some pretty damaging things on the chinchilla and the rabbit. And then you're looking at a problem.
They also can transmit some diseases back and forth, too. I mean, there are things, you know, people and animals, cats and dogs, have some pretty nasty bacteria and other things, yeast living in our mouths. And we don't necessarily want to be licking or have our other pets, our small exotic pets, being licked by these animals, because those bacteria are not necessarily normal in the bodies of a lot of these exotic pets. And even though well-meaning, cute little dogs and cats may just want to play with these animals, again, they can inflict harm and inadvertently transmit disease.
Absolutely. It can be very dangerous. I've actually seen quite a few households with rabbits and cats. Now, this doesn't mean that rabbits and cats can't live together, but cats do carry a bacteria underneath their nails that can be very deadly to rabbits. So just one, you know, little play event where maybe the cat makes a little poke into the skin of the rabbit, and then you may be looking at a very life-threatening disease for your rabbit after that.
Even some exotic pets. I know we go into pet stores all the time, and we cringe when we see guinea pigs housed with rabbits. Guinea pigs are rodents. Rabbits are not rodents at all. And basically, they should not be housed together, because each species has its own bacteria that, when transmitted to the other species, can be deadly. And they should not be housed together at all. And that's a mistake often many people make. And people just think, oh, cute little furry critters, we can put them all together. That's not the case. And again, that's not something necessarily people would know unless you did your research first.
Absolutely.
On the flip side, there are actually diseases that some of these animals can carry too that can be contagious to people, and especially if people are on certain medications or have certain diseases that suppress their immune systems, it can be actually harmful for them to have some of these animals, like the reptiles or the turtles that can sometimes carry salmonella and other things as well.
The other thing is sometimes we can actually transmit things to our pets. For instance, ferrets are one of the type of animals that can actually catch colds from us. So just kind of, again, just kind of knowing you as a household, knowing your health status itself, and then knowing the best type of pet that's going to be working for you based on that.
These are all really important factors. I think we have a few more things we want to cover, but we're going to take another break now and hear from our sponsors. This is Pet Life Radio, the exotic pet vet, and we'll be back in just a minute.
So when we brought him home, we didn't realize that Bear, the rescue dog, was actually sick. He had very flaky skin. He was dropping a lot of fur, and LeVette wanted to do steroid injections, special dog food. Nothing seemed to work. So I've been hearing Dinovite on the radio for years.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
It never actually crossed my mind to try it until I was just at a dead end. And then it finally sunk in. Oh, you're talking about hair and skin. And all right, I'll try it. Well, it took probably 6 weeks, but after we started using Dinovite, no more flaky skin. He doesn't scratch and itch, and he started to put weight on. It was awesome. He makes us feel like we saved him. Every rescue dog in America deserves Dinovite for 90 days. I wish that we would have started the Dinovite right away. It would have been so much easier.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
Hi, I'm Dana Humphrey, the founder of Whitegate PR. We have been specializing in PR and marketing in the pet industry for over 10 years. If you have a pet product or service you would like to promote, give us a call. We can help create awareness for your brand on TV, radio, magazines, newspapers, and blogs. Feel free to reach me directly at 619-414-9307 or learn more on our website at whitegatepr.com or follow us on Facebook.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Here we are back on Pet Life Radio, the exotic pet vet. I'm Dr. Lori Hess, here with Dr. Kristen Britton and Dr. Amanda Marino. And today we're talking about choosing the right exotic pet for you. A few more things we wanted to talk about, Dr. Britton.
So basically, we kind of started off with, you know, definitely time, the type of household that you have. You know, I want to dive a little bit further into that. A lot of people are getting exotic pets, potentially for their children or as a gift. Again, the thing I want to really drive home is research that pet as much as you can. Contact as many people as you can about that type of animal to make sure it's right for you. But we just want to give you guys some ideas of, like, for smaller children, what may be the best type of exotic pet that you may want to look into.
So starting off with mammals, as we kind of talked about, rats are really good pets. A lot of people, as we've kind of mentioned as well, you know, don't really think of rats as good pets, but they're usually very, very friendly and they're sturdy. They like to be handled and they don't really bite, unlike some of the mice and the hamsters that people think would be better because they're a little bit smaller, a little bit fuzzier. But those animals actually, I feel like, bite more often than even a rat will. The one major downfall to rats is that they really do have a short lifespan. You know, usually about 2 years is how long that they live. But, you know, again, they still make a very good pet for a younger child.
They're also really, really clean. People don't understand. They're super, super fastidious in keeping themselves clean. So people that associate rats with dirty or any of those things, they're just wrong.
The other type of mammal that I think are pretty children-friendly would be guinea pigs. Guinea pigs are super social little things, but they can be very, very skittish. And so with a nervous guinea pig, you want to make sure that you spend a lot of time getting them socialized with your children. Make sure that the kids understand not to go too fast with them, those types of things. But they make these cute little adorable squeals, and your kids are going to have such a great time with them, like getting them vegetables. vegetables from the fridge, and they hear that bag in the fridge, and they just start just talking to the kids. And so that really makes a good pet for them. Again, they are a more sturdy mammal type animal, and so your kids can handle them and be able to, and they, like I said, they can be very social. They do have some special needs. They do require vitamin C. They require potentially dental work and things over time. So again, researching that type of animal, making sure that that's the right type of mammal for you.
They do some cool behaviors though. I mean, there's something called popcorning, which most people don't know about. And when you see it, you'll understand why it's called that. But they basically jump up in the air and twirl around, and it's when they're happy. And if you've never seen it, it's pretty amazing. And it's really fun for kids to see that they can make an animal that happy that it does this really phenomenal behavior.
You get a lot of feedback from a guinea pig.
Yeah.
So especially some of the little boys are going to be more interested in kind of the reptiles and the mammals. And so there are some good reptile species as well. Bearded dragons are one that I think of because they have personalities for sure. And they're pretty sturdy. It does gross some people out, but they do eat live prey. So they do get crickets or mealworms that are alive, as well as, you know, vegetables and things like that.
That's a really important point, though, because a lot of people come in, I hate to be stereotypical, but there's a lot of moms that come in here and say, I don't want to feed anything live. That's gross. I'm not going to feed. Well, if you really feel like that, then that's your answer. Then that is not the right pet for you.
Absolutely.
That's what they need to stay healthy. And if you're not comfortable with it, then choose another type of pet.
But one thing that's really important with most of these reptile species is kind of their husbandry, that you need to do the research on that particular species. Like bearded dragons need UVA and UVB light. They need certain heat requirements. They need calcium supplementations and reptile vitamins. And this is not something that's necessarily told to you when you purchase these things at the pet store. And so research is really important before you go out and buy these animals, because they do need a little bit more of a startup and a maintenance. But once you get kind of a routine down, they can be great pets.
I think, too, it's important that if you look for information about these pets online, realize there's a lot of outdated material online. There's a lot of sort of opinionated stuff that's not based on science online. Exotic pet care is constantly changing, and our job as exotic pet veterinarians is to keep up with those changes and to keep you educated. So regardless of what type of pet you choose, it's really important when you first purchase it or adopt it to bring it to an exotic pet savvy veterinarian so that you can learn the most current information on how to keep that animal happy, healthy, in terms of nutrition, environment, heat, light, humidity, all of those factors, so that the animal doesn't get sick and that you can really enjoy the pet and bond to the pet and have the pet be happy as well.
Absolutely. So kind of continuing on the theme of reptiles for younger kids, turtles and tortoises are always kind of a fun one to do. Now, keep in mind, though, turtles and tortoises can have carry bacteria like salmonella. So we want to make sure that the kids wash their hands anytime they're handling the animal before and after. That way that bacteria doesn't get transmitted. The turtles and tortoises are very sturdy animals. They're fun to watch eat. I don't know if you guys have ever seen a picture of like a tortoise or a box turtle going after a really big red strawberry. Oh, their mouth goes wide open and they just get really excited about it. And it's fun to watch them eat and kind of burrow and do digging activities and things like that. If you're a little bit creeped out by the creepy crawlies that you might have to feed your bearded dragon, maybe a turtle is a better option. Some turtles and tortoises can be vegetarian, but not all of them. So again, kind of keep that in mind. Some aquatic turtles definitely eat meat. So do the research and find out who's who on that caliber there. Some other animals that might be good for smaller kids are fish. Again, the interaction isn't as much, but especially just teaching them how to care for that animal, you know, feeding them, taking care of the tank. It's a really good starter animal. Betta fish are really good, goldfish, tetras, things like that.
So I think that's definitely a factor, too, that you bring up there is what is the purpose of the animal for the family or the child? Do you necessarily need to handle it and cuddle it? Are you okay with just watching it? Do you want the animal to talk like a bird? I mean, what level of interaction are you expecting? Do you have allergies in your family? Obviously, not everybody can have a furry or feathered pet. And in that case, sometimes a reptile or an amphibian. If you see some amphibians, some frogs and toads, which also have their own merits, you know, that might be a better choice. There are so many pets to choose from. And it honestly, we could sit here all day and tell you about all the factors of all these pets. Just remember that not every exotic pet makes a great pet for everyone. They can be great pets in the right circumstances. And it's really up to the potential owner to find out as much as possible and make it a project. If you're doing this with a child, help the child do the research, be responsible so you can find the right exotic pet for you. So I think we've covered quite a bit today. If you have any other questions, please let us know. But this is the Exotic Pet Vet. I'm Dr. Lori Hess, here with Dr. Kristen Britton and Dr. Amanda Marino. And we hope you'll tune in again next week to hear more about the Exotic Pet Vet.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.